Extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Oh, desde Nueva York, Nueva York, estás escuchando Extra Time. Soy Andres Weeby with my compañeros in football, Matt Doyle, David Goss, Stefano Fusaro.
Stefano's entertained.
He likes it.
Yeah, he nailed it. You nailed it.
You think so?
I'm the first one to be like, I'm going to criticize you on this, but you nailed it.
Oh, it is a big day here at Major League Soccer. Check it out. MLSES.com, Major League Soccer Spanish language website, is back. The most complete information, latest news, stats, as we appreciate and approach the end of the regular season and the playoffs. MLSES.com. Shout out to Edgar Acero, our overlord in editorial content, who is now overseeing everything on the English side as well as everything on the Spanish
two
side.
Jobs. Two
Dan
jobs.
Dan has for to fill in that one team I miss in power rankings every single
it's
week.
Always one team. Who was it this week?
It was Miami.
Because
I dropped them.
That's a shocker.
Because I didn't know where to put them. And I moved. It's the ones you move a lot, right? Like if they're somewhere near where they were last week.
Yeah,
it's the ones that go from
top,
like top to middle or bottom to middle.
You're not going
to
miss Toronto.
No, never.
No.
Toronto and Colorado have a permanent place in my heart.
Yes, for sure.
On the bottom.
And also at the bottom of the rankings too, yeah.
I moved Colorado up to like 26th this week.
Oh.
Oh, you dropped Red Bulls?
Dropped Red Bulls to 28th.
Yeah.
And then I forget who I had 27th. Somebody who's not good.
It's a memorable place.
Yeah.
Charlotte?
Might have been NYCFC.
Galaxy?
We'll get to that. The New York Derby, the Hudson River Derby, whatever you want to call it, the new trophy.
New York, the center
of the soccer
world.
They should not have awarded that trophy. The like Lady Liberty Flame that they now have. For
who
the
got
winner.
It?
The Red Bulls did. And they celebrated sort of half-heartedly. It was one of the worst games of the entire season. We will talk as briefly
about
that as we
can. Go Liberty, playoff time. Mm-hmm. WNBA playoffs.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, visit MLSES.com. Check out MLSES on social media. Of course, it is also Hispanic Heritage Month. Friday marked the beginning of that. You can see if you're watching on Apple TV or YouTube. I am wearing the pre-match warm-up tops. It's honestly one of the sickest warm-ups that I've ever seen MLS do. Colorful, festive, just fun. It's fun. So go check that out if you want one. MLSsoccer.com, MLSES.com for more coverage. Match day 32. We're going to go through the best things we saw. Big time games. And there's some really nice goals as well. Orlando City on the rise. LAFC winning El Trafico. Philly of Ohio and Philly of Philly splitting the points. And of course, Lionel Messi not playing, but eating a garbage pizza and wearing jorts to his kids' game.
Speaking of not playing.
What?
Yeah, speaking of not playing, we've got a big story breaking over the wires.
Look, we've
Tom Boger.
We've covered Danny Musovski. We do not have to go back and cover Danny Musovski anymore.
Officially,
he was not in the squad for RSL.
I believe Pablo has now followed up on Tom's report that Wyatt Wiebe is holding out and refusing to play. It's because of, the rumor is it's because of coaching.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to be fair, Wyatt Wiebe and the U3 Orange team, he's not holding out. He's playing just on the field next door.
Yeah.
He just refuses
to join.
He's training on his own.
He's training with the U16s.
He understands that free play is actually the way to develop the technical skills he's going to need in the future.
This was also an issue with Cameron Wiebe
a
few years ago.
Yes, it is. But now Cameron's balling out.
But
perhaps
the thing is,
cultural issue overall.
Has management stayed the same?
Yes.
Between the two.
It has. Yeah.
So maybe it's not the... If it's two different players with the same problem... Maybe we know what their problem lies.
To be fair, Mindy has been talking about changing management.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if this is working for anyone here. No, it's tough. It's tough. He's refusing to play. The manager may have signed him up for organized soccer just a tad early. He just turned 3. I did it before with Cameron. I was just so excited. That time I didn't sign up to coach so we could just go play at the playground. This time I'm coaching everyone else's children. While my child terrorizes everyone else on the field over, runs through the middle of our drills with a soccer ball. He's a good dribbler and demands snacks from his mother, who has said that this cannot continue.
But yeah, this is a cultural issue with the club.
Yeah.
I think.
Clearly it's not the player.
No.
Obviously this
I think it feels like one, a style that doesn't fit the player's best skill sets, which is probably the original problem.
He's looking for a free role, and he's a little more regimented in our attack.
You're more of a positional,
positional play. Right.
He's a guy that needs to have that free space to be able to roam, right. do what he needs to do in the middle of the
Let
field.
Let him go find the game.
More of a soccer in the streets type of guy. Cameron
has adapted a little bit.
We had a goal line clearance from Cameron, a goal this weekend, so it was a banner one for us. But how about match day 32, Doyle? What's the best thing you saw in Major League Soccer?
The best thing I saw was the Houston Dynamo goal in their 1-1. A disappointing for Houston 1-1 draw against St. Louis City.
Wow, that was almost
SC, yeah.
Now we're all confusing it. Sporting fans think that's a sin. St. Louis City fans think that's a sin.
Yeah, I got that one all wrong right there. But the Dynamo got it all right on that goal. Even Koko Karaskia just like ignoring what was a perfect overlap. It was like a semi-transition goal. Dynamo are coming up with basically even numbers. Koko gets the ball on the right side of the box and just like completely ignores a perfect overlap. And I'm like, oh, this is a dead issue now. It's not going to happen. But pulls it back to the top of the box. And it was
Bossy.
It was Bossy.
Yes.
To Aceh, who had been the key to the whole movement. And like, Aceh just one touch directly into Bossy's run, which was kept onside because St. Louis had scrambled kind of poorly and then just chips it to the back post for Corey Barrett to head. This is the second picture perfect team goal that Houston scored in the past month. It was glorious.
I love that Corey Barrett at the back post was like, I could just do a normal header here, or I could jump up and throw my legs out in like a Jordan move and kind of, you know.
Yeah.
That's the
you learn that
for
at
you.
Stanford.
Yeah. He had to swag it out. I mean, he had to swag it. Your tweet about that goal was actually the funniest thing I saw, just because you're like, I'm not used to seeing Houston score goals like this.
No.
And then we've seen it now more than once.
It's a fair point, right?
So it's like, well, maybe we should be getting used to
that. They actually play some of the prettiest ball in the league. I thought they were pretty in this game. Their issue is that they really only have one goal scoring threat, and that's Corey Baird. And like, Corey Baird's got, I think, a dozen goals now, all competitions. Like, he has finally matched productivity to his potential, but it's not the type of lineup that you look at and you say, oh yeah, this is a team that's going to climb up the standings. And that's the way the rest of the game played out. I thought they were better than St. Louis on the day, but St. Louis has a way of sticking around, and Houston left the door open. 1-0 lead into the 85th minute, and Klaus makes it 1-1 by being in the right spot to put home a rebound. And you just got to give St. Louis all the credit in the world for, you know, even when they're getting outplayed, they stick around and they get results when they shouldn't. And that's why they're still top of the Western Conference.
This is the new Benny Ball with like five aside, with like a pickup game, the way that they were sort of playing it around and carefree and the celebration afterwards too. But this is now the Dynamo. They're fighting for a home playoff spot in the first round, the best of three series. Stefano, what's the best thing you saw?
Before we get there, we need more Corey Baird celebrations.
I think you and I are the only one that liked the crowd.
He didn't do it this time, though.
He hasn't done it now.
I think something him and Bossy had worked on that Bossy did not remember. Because he like did it and looked at Bossy, and Bossy's like,
what?
And he's like, and then Bossy did a different version, and I was like,
where are we on Bossy, by the way?
He's good. I don't know that he's elite.
Right.
But he fits what they do.
Yep.
And I think when you talk about what they need, they have a DP in Sebas Ferreira that's not going to be coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Most likely, they can fill that.
Scored goals for Vasco da Gama, by the way.
Sounds like a good
person to sell to Vasco da Gama, then. It feels like they can fill that role without losing Bossy. And I think he's been better. I mean, he's been better than Franco Escobar, right? Like, he's first 11 for them, especially if they lose Koko. I think he's someone that you want to keep around for a while.
Yeah, I think that's right. And we'll see this weekend, because it'll be Koko's suspended. So right. Kovalchuk, I think, will go into the starting lineup, but Bossy will still be
or
out.
Or Caicedo.
No, it'll be Kovalchuk.
Okay.
And here
now we have to check that one on Monday. Right.
Check that one.
I'm not going to be here
first
on Monday.
10 minutes
so you have
of
to
the
do
show,
it for
we
me.
Got a Koko, Kovalchuk, as well as Caicedo debate. So we're really in top form here.
Right on brand. All right, best thing I saw, Orlando City's comeback against Columbus. Columbus has been, I've said it all year, has been one of the most interesting and fun teams to watch. They still are, but the reason that they're so fun to watch is because things like this can happen to them as well. Their defensive issues come back. Orlando, that I think this was a bigger game. I don't know who it was a bigger game for, but Orlando, I feel like, at home to go down 3-1, to come back, get that win
Ramiro Enrique doing the thing late in the game and be able to get that win at home, move up to the second spot in the Eastern Conference. What that means for Orlando now, I think, is just huge with the Inter-Miami game at home coming around the corner. I think that was so massive to get them to get that win, to move up, and also put Columbus in a spot where it's like, hey, we're really good on offense, but our defensive issues, we've been able to kind of slide by, you know, still having these issues and still be able to get results. It's starting to creep in, and it might be an issue for Columbus moving forward. I just think it was a very big game, both ends, for Orlando and for Columbus.
Not just second in the East, second in the Shield.
Right.
Surprisingly so. It's one of those results that makes you think, that really gives credence to those that sat and said maybe that Orlando City won the offseason.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
Are these the same people who told me last week that Orlando wouldn't have possession against Columbus? Boom. I had a retort.
Those people can't remember if that's exactly what they said. To be fair. To be fair to those people.
So with Orlando, I mean, we talked about this a lot. I questioned how long it would take to gel. They kept their head above water until it gelled. And I think the big part to me about this game is that they were down 3-1.
Right.
And that there was like no panic to them. They were gifted some opportunities by Columbus, including the game-winning goal.
Columbus does that, though.
Yeah, Patrick Schulte decided that he wasn't allowed to use his hands anymore, which I thought was a bold move by him.
Yeah, it's just defensively, we've talked about this multiple times on this show. They've played a lot of games with a bunch of wingbacks as center backs. That happened a lot earlier in the season. They got away with it. Yeah, they got some guys back, but they clearly have some issues back there. And in a game like this, for it all to kind of come collapsing down and lose a game like this, I think it's telling. And it goes to show you, like, is this Columbus team as dangerous as we think? Because they can give up 3 goals like this on a whim and lose any game. So it really kind of throws up in the air how confident some people were about Columbus, including myself.
Well, I think for Orlando, it's like Columbus puts their third goal of the game against Montreal away, and Montreal goes to bed.
Right.
Where Orlando is a top half team of the playoffs, where they didn't, and the chances will still be there. A lot of teams stopped playing, stopped trying. Mo Farsi was a bit of a train wreck off the bench as well, which didn't help. But yeah, I think for this Orlando team, like, these are the moments that now you start to build on. Say they beat Cincinnati, they beat Columbus, they are a legitimate contender at the top of the East, and it's gelled as quickly as you could hope for, which is going into this year's playoffs. Because my concern was it would take a year. And Oscar Pereira has done it quicker than that. So credit to him.
Oscar's out of contract after the end of the season. There's an option on their decision makers in the front office, too. It is a little bit of an interesting time for the Lions. Just want to say, crew had 53% possession and dominated possession when Orlando got the 2 goals to tie and win. I just throwing it out there just as context for the people at home.
Yeah, 53% is less for Columbus than normal.
Okay. We're just talking here. We're just, you know, we're just going back and forth.
Okay, cool. You were going to say something about
No, I was going to say this is the highest in the standings Orlando have been this late in this season, second in the Shield race. In the first five years of their existence, they had 189 points total, did not make the playoffs once. In 3.5 years, essentially, under Oscar Pereja, they now have 190 points. They've made the playoffs every time. They won a trophy last year for the first time in their MLS existence. They've developed multiple young players. Daryl Dike, obviously, but Facu Torres has played his way into being a regular for Uruguay.
Who did not start this match. And Duncan McGuire wasn't even available.
Wilder Cartagena, who is a very good Peruvian international, he was not available as well. They've done fantastic work. They've done the work that I think we all expected Oscar Pereja to do when he came back from Tijuana and took over. If he is a free agent after this season, which seems like there's a reasonable chance that that's going to be the case, he'll not be out of a job for her very long.
I think the Portland Timbers area code is calling.
Yeah,
I think the Denver area code is calling.
It's bonkers for Orlando to not give that man an extension.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously we don't know maybe what's happening behind the scenes. I don't know, but if Orlando lets that guy go after, I mean, it's a proven track record. It's not just this year, right? We've seen him do this. We saw him do it at Dallas. We've seen him do it over the year. Like if they don't re-sign him, it's like, what are you thinking? I just can't fathom them just letting him walk.
We're just out here. These are scenarios, no reality. Just
of course
playing guesswork here. San Diego would need a coach, would want to establish
Chicago?
Chicago. Both isn't of those, this, you would look at the,
isn't this
at
the moment
talent that maybe would, could be brought up from the academy structure as well?
Yeah.
Chicago is really interesting.
Yeah, because he would have a budget.
Yeah.
Because like the one thing you can't knock the fire for is spending. Like over the past 5 years or 4 years, is it that the new ownership has been in town? Like they have opened up the checkbook and they have not spent it well, but they have been willing to not only just go for high end, potentially DPs, but like buy their way out of mistakes. And they've opened the floodgates for that academy. We're seeing Ryan Gutierrez, Chris Brady is just like straight up better than Gaga Slonina. He was like the best goalkeeper in the league this weekend. I mean, again, if Oscar Pereira has out of a job at the end of the season, like he has to be the first call the Fire front office makes.
Yeah.
All right. Best thing you saw, Dave.
The best thing I saw was New Philadelphia, which apparently is located in Ohio, equidistant between Akron and Columbus.
It might be the better Philly now.
New Philadelphia is a real place, is what I'm saying.
Oh, is it?
In Ohio.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that.
I have it up here. It is the seat of the county seat of Tuscarawas County, Ohio.
I don't think that's the way.
You don't think I just nailed that? That felt smooth coming out.
Wait, it's actually called New Philly.
New Philadelphia.
Wow.
Yeah, New Philadelphia, Ohio. But it's not near Cincinnati.
It sounds like the setting for like a post-apocalyptic sci-fi movie.
Yeah. The play starts in New Philadelphia.
Snake Plissken lives there.
This is a geography podcast now.
It is. I would love that.
Oh, my God.
It
should be a geography quiz podcast. People should send things in that they think would stump us.
Yeah.
And we'll either shock or astound them.
Yeah.
One of the two.
I normally bat 50-50 on those, or 500. So I'm going back to the thing I was supposed to talk about.
Yes.
Which was in the Philadelphia-Cincinnati game, which was a massive result for FC Cincinnati on the road against one of the better teams without Lucho Acosta. But there was two red cards in this game. Neither of them were assessed to Matt Miazga, but all of it was caused by Matt Miazga.
That's impressive.
He took the ball away from Gazdag after an early foul. Gazdag went down holding his face incorrectly. And Gazdag's on Goss Golden Boot team, so we defend him in that. But the tenor of the game changed because of Matt Miazga, and like he riles up the energy. He's always talking to the ref. It was Ismail Al-Fat this time. Not yelling, just always talking. Every foul, it's a question and communication. It seemed to cause a lot of angst throughout the game. It's a very David Goss move. I cause the issues in the game, but then I'm not the one to cross the line on the last spot. And then do you see Brandon Vasquez said something to Mascara? And it's like, that would be me too. I'd be like, come on, dude, you got to know when to contain yourself. And like that.
After just starting the whole issue.
After causing all the problems. Yeah, yeah. I think I named Miazga my defender of the year last week. As of right now, he still is. This was a really big result for FC Cincinnati. Bupenza was very good off the bench after halftime. He scored. I thought Kubo was okay in filling in for Lucho Acosta. But you can see, obviously, the massive gap in what they do. But either way, for Cincinnati, this was one of the toughest games they had left. And so to go on the road, to come from behind, to get at least a result, to maintain that spot towards the top of the Eastern Conference, it felt like a pretty big moment for them. And I think when you hear what Pat Noonan has said over the last year or so of like testing themselves and getting to that next level, this felt like a big performance and result.
8 points is the gap for the Supporters' Shield. We'll talk more about how close they are or who could actually challenge. It's sort of seeming like everybody's falling away. Philadelphia dropping points here at home. Nope. New England dropping points in Colorado. Orlando do get the win, but they again are still 8 points back. Cincinnati look like they're going to go get this shield and the first trophy in club history. Congratulations to them. Best thing I saw, obviously Sharpie lad, our good mate. What a goal that was. Like the pirouette and turn, clearly he meant that, intended it. I was astounded by the dexterity, balance, and awareness of that finish. But really, I think it's Denny Bawanga back in form. Because while Sharpie scored, LAFC won 4-2 in El Tráfico. And this was the result that they needed and the moment they needed for Denny Bawanga. Bawanga had 2 goals in his last 12 league games. They just have not had the cutting edge, had lost 3 straight to non-playoff teams. I know that one of those was Miami, but they're not a playoff team. They're 14th in the East. And now they're going to make the West interesting. Like, I can't figure out if the urgency and the stakes of this game were what got LAFC back to some semblance of the swashbuckling team we saw at the beginning of the year and in Leagues Cup, or if it was just the Galaxy's transition defense as always.
I think it was just the Galaxy top to bottom. The Sharp goal comes 30 seconds after the goal they conceded, yeah. And then they scored off like a throw in.
It was a flick by Boyd and then Yoshida.
They were not dangerous. No, not otherwise, really. They didn't dominate the game in where it was played. They basically laid down. And for LAFC, they have not taken advantage of those moments. So I think you're right in like Buanga finding some confidence. I thought Bogus was pretty good in this game as well. But the Galaxy didn't show up. So that's a pretty good spot to start with for LAFC of getting back into form.
Al Hampton said Ricky Puig is overrated and LAFC manhandled him out of the game.
It's a little unfair. I think he definitely wasn't 100% Puig, but it was not a vintage Ricky Puig performance by any stretch of the imagination.
Apparently he's had a groin issue for a couple weeks now that he's been dealing with, but you know, he was the protagonist. He was center stage. He was the guy, you know, answering to Payaso.
He also plays in a team that starts Uri Rossell in 2023 and Billy Sharp. Like, I'm sorry.
Hold on.
Let's throw Messi out there with these guys and see how it looks.
Fair.
It is not.
Speaking of Messi.
It's not a well-constructed roster.
No,
Galaxy.
They're bad.
Yeah, they're better than they were
at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, but they're still, like, this is a team headed for some major surgery in the offseason, for sure.
Just keep Sharpie out your mouth. Speaking of Lionel Messi, he did not play in Atlanta. The news came out the night before that he would not travel. Lionel Messi then helped everyone confirm the news by posting a Argentine pizza on Instagram that was immediately dragged for its lack of...
Fugazzetti? Was it a Fugazzetti?
Fugazzetta.
I mean...
Fugazzetta.
Alexis Guerreros did the most impressive pizza breakdown I've ever seen on the Golazo Network this morning, and I would not dare to try to copy, repeat... imitate any of what he did. So I will just tell you, go to the Golazo Network, go to their Twitter account, watch the full 7 minutes of him breaking down exactly where and how this pizza comes from.
You gonna answer for your people here?
I will. Because and it's gonna upset some Argentine folk out there. I've never liked Argentine pizza ever. Since I was a kid going to Argentina to visit family, I've never liked it.
Let's
get the close up on him. Just the single shot, please.
Fugazzetta when it's focaccia style, thick and not thin, and I like that because I like onions better. And cheese.
Yeah, it is better. I just
can't go wrong.
The one that Messi got, and whatever he wants to, if that's how he likes it, that's on him. That's still not a great representation of Argentine pizza because there still is a lot of cheese involved. There's a lot of oregano. The olives are what kill it for me. I like olives by itself. I don't like olives on my pizza. Onions are good.
And it's green olives. It's not black olives.
It's green olives, yeah. And that's always been a
it's weird.
The olives on the pizza, that's a staple for Argentine pizza. But what he had there, where it was just a layer of tomatoes on top, and I don't know if I hope there was cheese on the bottom, so at least there's something, and maybe
you need the barrier thing. You need the moisture barrier there, otherwise you're gonna have a soggy crust. I'm most interested in the olives. I love a green olive. I've never seen it on pizza. A little bit of a salty.
Do you like the Castelvetrano olives?
Is that I don't
you?
Know what that is.
Those are Spanish olives.
It's a Spanish olive, but there's also a very similar Southern Italian style.
I put them in martinis, I think.
Yeah.
I just eat them straight out of the jar.
You could do both with a martini. You put the olive in the martini.
I also do that.
You drink the martini.
Right.
Then you eat the olive.
You know what you can do? You could freeze the olive juice with the olive in it and use it as an ice cube.
Wow.
In
that's the martini. That's kind of gross.
Okay. So
Instagram,
you're out,
baby.
You're out on the pizza. Where do we stand on the jorts?
Oh, boy.
On the, you know, on the Saturday morning at the Suns training jorts. The roll-up jort, so it's not even like the
so we saved
cut
the,
off.
We saved the banter for 20 minutes into the show.
Again, I'll say this. Sorry to my father. I'm sorry to all my family. I'm sorry to everybody. Fashion, men's fashion in Argentina, not a thing, because that's kind of what you're going to see a lot of. A lot of jorts, a lot of rolled-up jorts, a lot of questionable sneaker decisions.
So it's basically just like being in Florida is what you're saying.
fair. But yeah,
yes, Messi. Two things that are meaningful same at one time, Doyle.
The problem is that I can't argue. I guess he's 100%
right. As a recent New Jersey resident, you also see that in New Jersey.
No, I was waiting for him to throw Jersey under the bus, too.
I don't know about the rolled up jorts. I think I'll give New Jersey a little bit more credit than the rolled up jorts. Those are pretty bad.
That's more South Jersey, I would say. Yeah.
Fair. Mm-hmm. So is that what we'll see Tom Boca wearing on the beach?
South Jersey
I just said Dragon Tom.
We work with Diego Valeri, and he is always the best dressed guy in this studio every single week. So is he's just an outlier? He's like a 99th percentile outcome?
I mean, I feel like he's always well-dressed because, you know, he's in the studio. He's got the suits.
He can wear a suit. Looks good. That man can wear a suit.
He can wear a suit. I'm talking more like the casual dad on the weekend playing soccer, watching his kid like Messi was. You're going to see a lot of that. I'll be the first one.
In front of the Asada, maybe?
But yeah, exactly. My cousin, 100%, if I start looking through some of the pictures, my one specific cousin has 1,000% more wore the rolled up jorts. I have to go look. I will look at pictures and bring that to you guys.
So, Weeby, Messi in that picture had a jug of mate.
Yes.
Yep.
And he was coaching his kid. And I think his kid plays for him. So maybe this weekend, in order to get Wyatt to respect you a little bit more,
wow.
You show up with the mate and the rolled up jorts.
You know what? I have rocked the jorts in the past.
I had a jort era
during my Brooklyn days. So
do it for the content, Weeby.
Yeah, I had a jort era.
No sleeves till Brooklyn.
Yeah, that's. I didn't know if you remembered that, but had
I
the,
did
had
remember
the,
it.
Had the tank top. I wore that to a few MLS games. So that was a shameful period of my life. Messi had muscle fatigue, and Tata said it would have been, quote, very reckless for him to play in Atlanta. It was a huge bummer, obviously, for the many folks that you saw in the crowd in Messi jerseys there to see Lionel Messi. So
they got a show.
They did get a show because Atlanta United threw it back, in my mind, to the days when Tata was the manager and put on that kind of show, Doyle.
Yeah, it was really impressive. So they've been doing this thing since the end of Leagues Cup because they were able to add John De Silva on the left, who I love. I don't like Savadlo Givinica quite as much on the right, but he has been he's been super productive. Mosquera, the young U22 signing, he's been starting on the right. Yakumakis with Thiago Almada underneath him as a 10 in a 4-2-3-1. And obviously Tristan Muyamba is probably the most important of so Muyamba answers the big question, can you win the ball in central midfield? But then the real thing that's happening now is the wingers are so much better that they're not having to throw both fullbacks forward kind of without, you know, damn the torpedoes, without, you know, considering the consequences. They needed to do that earlier in this season in order to create the kind of attacking overloads that I think Gonzalo Pinedo wants. So by being a little bit more pragmatic about the fullbacks, they're also allowing them to do kind of some fun stuff. And in this game, and mostly since the return to leagues action after the Leagues Cup, Brooks Lennon is coming inside. And Brooks Lennon, I know you guys have watched him too. He's always been just a strictly north-south player, right? Like, even when he's getting into the box, it's always just been like an outside-in run, trying to get on the back post, put one away. He's a good crosser of the ball, so there was a lot of just like run up the sideline as fast as you can, and you get into the final third, cross it. That's pretty predictable. It is a low percentage play. In this one, he's coming inside, and they did this really good sort of rotation in possession where when they were on the ball, Thiago Almada would get like right into Sergio Busquets' gravity. And like Sergio Busquets is not stupid. He knows who the best player on Atlanta United is. And if Almada comes inside and then drifts outside, Busquets follows Almada. So Atlanta started using that to pop Busquets out of the middle. And at the same time, Brooks Lennon is coming into the middle to take what is now wide open space. First goal happens like that. Third goal, the one that Brooks Lennon scores, happens like that. It was like, oh, Thiago Almada, Brooks Lennon, and Gonzalo Pineda are just out here outfoxing Tata Martino and Sergio Busquets. Like, that was that was real, like, MLS good stuff that gets you going, and you know, maybe you need to call the ambulance at one point. I could not believe what I was seeing.
If you're still excited about the day after, please call a doctor.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and like Atlanta's not perfect, like they still give up a ton of chances, like their defensive rotations are still slow. Like we saw it on the first goal, which by the way, Leo Campana,
banger.
Given Miles Robinson's sombrero right in the middle of the box, like that was spectacular. But like the real problem with that was Dixon Arroyo had, you know, 10 minutes to pick out his spot and stride into it. And even a guy who is not a goal scoring threat, which we all agree Arroyo is not, like even a guy who's not a goal scoring threat, you give him that much time, they're going to create some kind of danger. So Atlanta's not perfect. They haven't fixed everything, but like they were really smart about exploiting certain Miami weaknesses and even exploiting certain Miami strengths, which is Sergio Busquets' IQ, right? Like, knowing that Busquets would get pulled into Almada's gravity and that would create open spaces if the rotations were good and you were clean on the ball. And that is literally how this game played out. Atlanta 3-1-1 since the return to action after League's Cup. The only loss was late breakdown against Cincinnati in a game that I think that Atlanta had kind of controlled for the first 80 minutes. Really impressive, man. And this is them. They beat a Miami team that had not lost for a couple months, all competitions.
2 months.
Like, we have thought Miami was going to lose at times, right? I thought that LAFC were going to get them. I thought Nashville was going to get them in that second game. But it wasn't going to be like this. I thought it was, oh, you create a turnover and you go, and they're not going to be able to run with
you.
Or
set piece goals.
Yeah, this was Atlanta using the ball to rip Miami apart.
Revancha? Venganza?
Venganza.
Yeah, you like that? Oh. A little revenge for the League's Cup beatdown?
Right.
Credit to Garth Lagerwey, Carlos Bocanegra, also to Gonzalo Pineda, the quickness with which they've integrated the new signings, the recognition of weakness, and then to go get the targets they needed in the summer. How have they changed your perception of them?
Completely. I think going into this game last week when we were previewing, I said I didn't consider them a real soccer team when they played in League's Cup. I think Doyle mentioned it. Muyumba is the biggest of all of it. It's the first time they've had balance, probably since MLS Cup. Like, even after that, they have not been a team in which if they turn the ball over in one part of the field, everything is covered behind it or can be covered for. And they haven't had players who will readjust to what other players do. So when you look at Rossetto and whoever else he's played in midfield, he leaves a ton of gaps. He makes a ton of mistakes. He turns the ball over a lot. Terry Rossetto is one of the worst starting players in Major League Soccer, as has been Franco Ibarra and Santiago Sosa. They don't cover for each other. Muyumba is always moving. Yeah. He's always active. He's always reassessing what's going on in and out of possession and being one step ahead. And if he's not, he's sprinting to get in position. He knows where to foul. He knows where not to foul. That's what I think you saw in this game, was the balance that he brings. Unlocks Almada to do a lot of those things because he doesn't have to stretch. Unlocks the fullbacks to do a lot of those things because they don't have to be in rest defense immediately, and they're not going to give up goals just because they take risks. He is the biggest part of that. And then you add in all the other pieces they brought, and what I think has been really good is the wide players, while they're connected more, and this is something that Araujo struggled with, right, is Almada's the one who should create the game. You shouldn't have the ball all the time. But you can't be the polar opposite, which is I never want to take anyone on, because you are going to get space. And I think the decision making right now for Silva and Mosquera in when to take guys on 1v1 and when to keep the ball moving, that's been really high level. Neither of them are as good of dribblers as Araujo is, but it doesn't matter because Araujo doesn't do anything after he gets to the spot. Both of them, I think right now, they keep defenses guessing. They keep defenders on them, so it gives space for other players to create chances. And I think Silva's been the key of, he works hard, so he's a part of the team when they helping win the ball back. And then he can be dangerous enough individually going the other way. You know, Giacomakis is going to finish. You know, defenses are going to scramble when he's making runs in the box. Even on the goal that Kamal Miller scores on his own, it's a nightmare because you have to come to Silva. You know, Giacomakis is making a double move behind you and is going to be wide open and he's going to finish. And I just think now you're starting to see the pieces that fit together. Abraham's re-entered the team, looks stable, and Miles Robinson looks back, which is really big as well.
Atlanta currently in sixth place, but it is packed up in the Eastern Conference from third, which are the Revs at 48, all the way down to sixth in Atlanta at 45. Home field advantage, not just in the first round, best of three, but remember, that's going to extend to winner-take-all games after that. Like, it is so crucial. Atlanta are 9-3-3 at home and just 3 wins on the road all season. I know things have changed, but the end of this year, if you feel comfortably in the playoff field right now, is all about jockeying to get home field advantage. That will probably determine your playoff life. That's true for Atlanta. That's certainly true for Nashville below them, Columbus as well. They're all teams that are good at home and not so good away, but a massive result. The flip side for Inter Miami is this was coming at some point. Leo Messi being rested was coming. Some bad fortune some breaks that didn't go their way was coming.
We should make it clear. Messi was rested for the World Cup qualifier as well in Bolivia. So this was not just a, you know, coming to Atlanta playing on turf thing. This was like he clearly has some kind of knock because he does not miss qualifiers.
It was, he said it. It's fatigue. I mean, understandably so.
Yeah, and he was even asked out after scoring the winner against Ecuador in that first qualifier, to which, again, you can count on one hand how many times Messi's asked out of a game ever in any team he's ever played for. So it's clearly something that they were just, I mean, it is a precautionary thing. I do think that it's still, you know, he had might have had some sort of issue, but it's still precautionary. I think that we could have expected him to sit and to just be okay, move, you know, to just to make sure he's okay moving forward. It's also, I mean, it doesn't hurt that it's I mean, it's against Atlanta United away on the road. I think all of that kind of played into it coming back from Bolivia, even though he didn't play, he was still there. So I think it really had kind of all encompassing.
So Miami's 14th, Atlanta are 6th. Not a single team in between those won this weekend.
That was
the one positive for Miami.
Oh, they didn't pay a price for this. Yeah.
They only have so many games to drop points in, which is part of their problem. I did some rough math.
Math?
Yeah.
Tell us about this math.
This morning, pretty much it's if DC can get 9 points, I think Miami's in trouble. It doesn't feel like there's another team in between that's really going to hurt them. And Miami are behind Red Bulls, who they already beat, NYC, who they play, Charlotte, who they play twice, and Chicago, who they play. DC are the last playoff team. They don't play them. So that's...
And they have 2 games in hand on DC.
Yeah. Right. So that's the one. The math I did is Miami's on the 28 math. Now. Yeah. I think
I'm never calling it anything but math.
I think safely right now, if they max out, they'll get 44 points, which I put down as them dropping points either coming into or out of Open Cup in one of those 2 games.
At Orlando feels like a
That's the one before.
And then FC Cincinnati at home, if you give them a tie in that game. That put them at 44. DC are at 35 right now. So DC don't have the easiest schedule coming up. They have struggled to get results. They play, I think, at Austin. And then they close things out with one of the other teams. Oh, NYCFC, I think, on decision day. That's the team you're watching. Those are the two teams, I think, in that run. Unless someone does an MLS thing, which is like, oh, yeah, no. It turns out that
every five games,
Fabian Herbers is the best player in the league for 2 weeks. And then it could shift. I'd be stoked for Fabian Herbers if he ruins that.
I think Fabian Herbers might be out for the year.
Was he hurt?
Yeah, I think
so. Oh, man, Fab. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Fire had that form before Leagues Cup, and it is all about
I'll say Jonathan Dean.
Jonathan Dean. Whoa.
Is that the wrong name?
Haile Selassie, maybe?
Yeah.
That could be one.
That would be a good
TBD. Anyway, this was, I think, for Miami, look, that own goal, the Mayumba goal may or may not have crossed. It was called a goal. No way VAR is going to get involved without a smoking gun angle. So, like, there's some unfortunate scenarios for them.
Herbers played 85 minutes this weekend.
Ah, well, he was hurt at some point.
Doyle hates physical contact, and I'm just two pros over here hanging out.
It's like at least a third high five you've given him already.
Yeah.
That's unfortunate for the Fire. I think they have one goal in their 5 games since League's Cup.
Nice. Weeby's making excuses why he doesn't know.
I know. I'm just saying. All right. You know what? Is this just a blip? Like, what did you take away from this? And do you think Messi plays against Toronto midweek? Because Tata Martino said this: they will train on Sunday. We will see day to day. Nothing changes our outlook on how Messi will train. We have no urgency.
I wouldn't start him.
I definitely
playing
wouldn't.
Toronto.
Yeah,
at
I
home.
Don't think so either.
I wouldn't start him, and if you don't need him, don't use him.
Here's the other quote: if he is well and confident, he can get to play. And if this doesn't happen, he will wait a few more days.
Yep. I could totally see him coming off the bench if they need him. And if they don't need him, just...
And if they need him, that might be a bigger question mark.
Right, exactly.
Toronto at home might be a bigger...
And I think even bigger is that then Sunday is the road game in Orlando, which I think that is going to go a long way for them either sealing a playoff spot. Or I know there's more games after that, but that matchup...
But those are those points, those are unexpected points. Yeah.
Exactly.
I thought Farias was really good in this game. I thought he pulled some strings, but there's no central force without Messi. Now at home against Toronto, they're probably going to have most of the ball. Maybe you go to a back five with Christophe being fully back and you allow the wingbacks to help create. Alba didn't play in this game either. If he's back, maybe him and Yedlin as wingbacks gives you enough in the attack that you don't need Messi.
Based on what the Whitecaps did to Toronto, the more crosses you play, the better.
Yeah.
Blackman didn't jump for the first goal, and Brian White was simply alone in the 18.
Rheingold walked 45 yards into that cross. That then Brian White did the only thing he could do, and yet somehow Bradley was like, how did he pop up next to me for a header?
Well, we will see. It's a big match on Wednesday. Other key results in the East, you mentioned it. All the teams that Miami needed to drop points did. New York Derby, Hudson River Derby, 0-0. I'll cry crocodile tears at these teams' funeral. Like, I'm ready for both the New York teams to be done.
Yeah.
This was
terrible.
This was the worst this rivalry has ever been.
Yeah, without question.
No quality, no urgency. No nothing, really.
Pretty sad, to be honest.
The vibes from this NYCFC team, you watch their, and we're doing the body language thing, but like, it's disastrous. They look like they're absolutely hating life.
And I think the worst part coming out of this game, and we did the preview of their next game, so we talked about this a little bit already, is like, they were closest to what we had to Columbus now of like, oh, someone's hurt, we'll just play a possession guy and we'll dominate the ball. So yeah, we won't win, but like, we'll figure it out with the ball. And then Maxi Morales is out and it's like, let's just play three defensive midfielders. Let's play Tavon Gray at right back, who's played there obviously, but doesn't give you as much verticality. It just felt like they've moved away on like their lack of belief, but then the lack of belief in like who they are.
Yeah.
When I saw that midfield, I knew this game was going to be just tough. I was like, oh, okay, you're just going to go fight the Red Bulls.
Yeah.
Like that plays directly into the Red Bulls' hands and they can't score. So I guess nobody will score. What's the worst result? That scoreless draw, Charlotte scoreless at home against DC, or Montreal scoreless at home against the Fire? These were all gifts. These were just gift wrapped for Inter Miami. It could not have gone better.
Yeah. I still think Montreal is going to be okay.
Yeah.
But just on balance of how the game played out and expectations, because I think we all expected the Hudson River Derby to be what it was. And I don't think anybody's surprised by a 0-0 between Charlotte and DC. That hurt Montreal, that 0-0, because they were a much better team than Chicago. And they, unlike NYCFC, they have embraced their identity. And it's been fun to watch, especially the two up top, Vilsan and Kwadwo Opoku. They're fantastic two-way forwards. Neither is much of a finisher at this point. And their number 10s, Chouanier, was good. He played most of the game as a number 10 in this one.
Should have been sent off.
Should have been sent off, correct.
Always live on the line, though.
And then Bryce
did it to Kai Kamara, too. That was not that. Come on. That's former teammate. On teammate,
well, you can't say that with Kai because he's a former
teammate. Nobody can touch.
No one would be allowed to
nobody
play.
Nobody can touch. Yeah.
Bryce Duke came in, and I thought he had some good moments. But like, this is a time of year where that final third quality, like these are essentially playoff games, right? And you need that final third quality, and all the young guys kind of came up short for Montreal. So and. You know, on the flip side, I already raved about Chris Brady a little bit. He came up huge for this Fire team to keep the whatever flames of hope they have for this season to keep them alive.
Let me ask you this, just a brief aside on Montreal. They lost six of their first seven.
Good pronunciation.
They sold Georgie. Rommel's been out all season, basically.
Wanyama doesn't play anymore.
Right. They what? How many players left? They complete turnover.
Kamal for them? Miller, right. Alistair Johnston.
It's Rudy a long Camacho. List. For them to even be in this position right now, isn't that a huge success for Hernan Losada? Yeah.
I think so.
And when you look at under Nance 2 years ago, they lost on decision day to Orlando in a game in which a lot of the young guys didn't show up and they didn't get over the line. Yeah. And then the following year, they came back and they were second in the East and they pushed for Supporter Shield. So like,
beat that same Orlando team in the playoffs, beat the brakes off.
And I think this team isn't even supposed to be where the team was 2 years ago. You're still probably a year or two away in the cycle of as guys develop and get older. And that team had Wanyama and Kai Kamara to lean on and Camacho and some other like more experienced pieces, even Alistair Johnston, 25, 26. So yeah, I think this is, again, when we did this list, I wouldn't have put Montreal in here because I think they're safe to make the playoffs. I think they've now found their form and committed to who they are. But they are, the expectations, I think, are far away.
How much do they miss Romel Kyoto.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if they clearly need a finisher, and I think that's probably the best finisher they have in that forward room. And he has just been, he can't stay healthy. He, when he's played, I called his one game, one of his games back this season, immediate impact, scores the winner. They go off celebrating. You say, wow, that's just really what they're needing. Someone to get on the end of everything that Bryce Duke and Chouinard and Opoku are creating, and they just don't have it. And I feel like that it sucks because they have a really fun team. It just needs one guy to be able to finish these opportunities.
I mean, the hope is that it's going to be Vilsaint.
Right.
Right. And he does look the part. Yes. Right. Like he finds chances. And what do we always say? Like if a forward finds chances, you trust them to eventually figure out how to finish them. It's just tough. It's tough to drop points at home to a team that you're frankly much better than. Montreal have 1 point out of the last 9 on offer. They went to NYCFC at the end of August and they lost 2-0. They lost at home last week 4-2 to Columbus, and then only getting a scoreless draw out of this one. Their next games, home against Cincinnati, at Atlanta, at Orlando, oof, home against Houston, home against Portland, which is a weird one to have the second last week of the season, but Portland are playing well now, and then they finish at Columbus.
That's murderous
row. I think they're going to make the playoffs. I do, but I'm less sure about it after reading that schedule. How'd I do, David? How was the schedule
read? I like that read. It felt good. As you got into it, I didn't know what was happening, and then I settled in, and it felt good.
Good pacing to that. It felt dramatic. It was like, well, what's next? What's that? Seems difficult.
The small pause was key to it all.
Can I throw them on the Leo Campana trade list?
Because, so Campana.
Yeah, sorry.
I heard a couple of people complaining about your pronunciation of that.
Including Maria, apparently.
Yes.
Happy Independence Day, Maria.
I'll give you some lessons afterwards.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Should I put this jersey on? Will that help?
I don't know.
They seem like a team that's a young DP, right? That's sort of like in their window of the type of moves they make, and they have a ton of allocation money to spend, some of which they've already spent on Miami. They would be a team that I would look at for a couple of different guys in MLS where they may not leave the league, but they might leave their team, and that's what they've done in the past, a la Romel Kyoto, right? Like, we always knew Kyoto was talented. He's a question mark of how consistent. They could take that risk because they're not going to spend the money, and they've got young guys anyway. I think of, like, a Diego Rubio who will be a free agent. That seems like a DP for them, but yeah.
I'm going to throw out Charlotte as the most disappointing result. They get Copetti back for the first time since July in the starting lineup and have 2 shots on target.
Negative chemistry between Copetti and Svidersky.
They don't have any. They, you know, we used to do the old Darlington Nagby, like, best player in the world in the middle third, doesn't know what he's doing. That's them, the team. They don't know what they're doing in the final third. They don't have any rhythm. They don't have any sort of, like, connection. There's no link between players. It just seems like they get there and they're like, all right, cool. Now what? Okay, nothing. To have that happen against DC, who they're directly competing against, who are 9th. You could have taken points from your direct playoff competitor, was a huge faceplant.
Yeah.
Now, the flip side of it is, I think Donovan Pines committed a handball, and John Freeman, the referee, went to the monitor after being recommended that it was a clear and obvious error not to call the handball by Caroline Chouinard, the VAR, and said, I'm sticking with my call on the field, and I'm baffled based on the interpretation of the handball law that he made that decision. But he did, and when you only create 2 shots on goal, that's the situation you put yourself in to be complaining about the referee afterwards. So, anything else on Orlando-Columbus? Maybe we focus on Columbus, who have now dropped 18 points from winning positions. Wilfred Nancy had a very pointed press conference afterwards in which he was basically like, we worked on this for 10 days. Like, this is what we did during our prolonged break, was try to figure out how to close games, be more aggressive and focused in defensive situations. And then the 2 goals Enrique scores, the ball's basically sitting in the 18-yard box with crew players watching it while Orlando reacts quicker.
Yeah, it's the system and the style, though. Like, a lot of, they could have gotten a point.
The system and the style where you're getting just manhandled on set pieces.
I don't know that they got manhandled because Schulte came out and just whiffed on it. Like, it seemed like a pretty simple play. But Farsi pushing. Yeah. Like, they could have gotten out with a point if they chose to go to the corner or slow the game or play through, and they didn't. So I think part of that on Nancy is like, well, you've already leaned in. It clearly works for you to over play your style. And I think those parts you can't complain about and apologize for, because you are where you are because of that. And this game was another example of that, of like, when they were good in this game, it was because they had overwhelming numbers going forward. It's because Marrero was coming inside and creating. Yeboah was dangerous as well. Gressel finding the game wherever he wants.
So I'm gonna interrupt and push back on you. So 68th minute, Columbus go up 3-1. Kuchuk gets a goal. You think game over probably at that point. Two attacking subs from Oscar Pereja in the 70th minute. Two defensive subs. But the individuals
you chose, Sean Zawadzki and Mo Farsi, were the two changes, right?
No, Zawadzki and Shcherbko. That's essentially two center backs for your left wing back and Matan, who was basically their number 10 at this point. Isn't that more of, we went away from who we are, which is using the ball and always throwing numbers forward?
I agree with that, and I felt like it was a mistake when he made the moves, but in the way they played, they didn't go away from it. And again, the big play I'm talking about is Farsi tried to link up 1v1 with someone.
With Cucho.
Yeah. He loses the ball out in front of him, and then they come back and foul. Yeah. And that's the free kick that leads to the goal, where if Cucho plays into Farsi's feet and they pull the game back a little bit.
No, it was Farsi thought Cucho was going to make the run.
And then he chased it himself. Yeah.
But isn't this what Nancy's talking about in his post-game press conference, which is having the maturity and the realization of the right moments to make certain decisions?
Yep. Yes.
You were up 3-1. You had the ideal, Gressel, Rossi, Cucho. Like, the game is exactly how you would have wanted
it
to go.
But they can't sit in Schulte's lap because of the mistakes Schulte's making.
So possess the ball, but make the right decision in those possession moments to live another day. Isn't that, I think that's what he was said in his press conference. Like, we worked on this to have the maturity and recognition of those moments, not to go away from our style, but to say that risk isn't worth it in this moment.
Yeah. Clearly they didn't work on it in a way that took, because it didn't work.
But even if you play, even if you're still trying to play that style, when you make those subs, it's still a very defensive sub. So you're still essentially saying, we're going to, sit back, defend, not take as many risks moving forward, even though you're saying that they...
But they did, yeah.
But I mean, it's still at the end of the game, they're still pinned back twice, right? I mean, they're pinned back deep. I don't know. I just feel like that's not the style that the crew've gotten here with, and they made these subs and were more defensive, even if they didn't play that way. It's naturally more defensive because you're putting, five defenders on the field now?
So and the in style the end, gives you the free kick, but it's individual errors and lack of focus that poses you on the actual goals.
The Schulte thing,
right?
There's like no explanation for, but it's like sort of the medicine you're taking of, we have a generation Adidas goalkeeper, so we don't have to pay. Like, they're saving all this money, which I don't think they've really used yet fully from losing Eloy Room. And so it's like you're giving up some production on the field for space on the cap and opportunity, and you're hoping a long future with Schulte or a sale, one of the two. But it happened with Celentano last year for Cincinnati. It happened with Gagá Slonina last year for Chicago. It happened early this year with Chicago with Brady Scott. Like, that's a young goalkeeper making mistakes. They've played him through them. They kind of have no choice. What I say, Brady Scott, national backup goalkeeper.
Wow,
that's great.
The two points I'll make is that I still think, even with this loss, which is a brutal loss, Columbus is ahead of schedule for what I thought they would be this year.
You lost 4-3 at Orlando, who's second in the league.
Right, one loss in 11 for Orlando. Yeah, so they're still ahead of schedule. And two, I really do think that they will be better because of this loss. I do think that sometimes you need the hard lesson, especially when you have a young team, and they are pretty much a young team at most spots now. This is a hard, good lesson that I expect them to put to use down the stretch here. I still would want no part of this Columbus team if I was heading into the playoffs.
My assumption just going forward is, so off the team we saw this week, Cucho gets pulled into the Matan role and Ramirez comes back on the field. But I thought this was the best Rossi has looked so far. And their attack is so fun to watch. And all of that is like, I mean, this is what I thought we talked about last week would be the best game. And like, for 75 minutes, it was absurd.
Absolutely. Great game. Also in the Eastern Conference, the Revs, after a very chaotic, dramatic week for them, go to Colorado and lose 2-1. Rapids were up 2-0. Looked really good. There was some news on the Rapids side. Centennial 38, the official supporters group of the club, staged a walkout. Maybe you saw the pictures. They walked out in the 20th minute. There were four simple banners left in place. The badge, the players, the fans deserve better. It has been a absolutely rugged season for the Rapids across the board. Obviously, Robin Fraser paid the price for this, but this was the fourth win of the year. Box State Footy hit us up and said, what's the solution for the Rapids and their fans? What does a positive change forward for this club look like? I think it's what we've said kind of over and over and over, right? In this era of MLS, even St. Louis got DP signings right, though they didn't spend at huge levels, and that is not in totality, but in large part what has driven a lot of their success. The Rapids have not gotten DP signings right in a long time, and they don't have the top-end talent to compete with the rest of the league.
Are we going to talk about Tafa Navarro claiming that goal?
The knee slide for a goal you don't score is
elite.
Yes, that's DP behavior.
He was very
good. Yeah, it is DP behavior.
He was very good, I thought, in this game. He clearly wants to link up. I mean, he wants to get a goal so badly, and sometimes
he's super excited. He is. It's very clear that he is juiced to be in Colorado.
Yeah. So and that is good.
That's very good.
The other thing that needs to be a part of this, WeeB, is like they need to start developing players again. You think about that 2021 team, Cole Bassett. That was his breakout season. Sam Vines, another one.
Bassett got a goal in this game, and Calvin Harris got his first goal.
Bassett playing as a 10 in a 4-2-3-1. It was a deeper line for Colorado in this game than they had played under Robin Fraser, right? So they were clearly trying to create space to counterattack into. Bassett is much better in that situation than he is in a situation where they're trying to.
It's what he played in 21.
Yeah. Calvin Harris, Calvin Harris buried DeJuan Jones on that goal. And like DeJuan Jones is probably the best left back in the league defensively. It was really good. They need more of that. They need the DPs to be good, and they need the young players to develop. And I don't know if Chris Little is going to be the right guy for that. Yeah. I know you think highly of
him. Yeah, he was in the Seattle Academy. He did a really good job. He jump-started a lot of the Obed Vargas, Josh Atencio, Reed Baker Whiting, that whole sort of
Reed Whiting Baker?
I'll never get that one right now. Although he did get an assist this week, so
it was a good
RWBIO. It was a good body, Paul Arioli. He earned his name.
Darren Yappe maybe got thrust in a little too early this year. They do have talent.
Well, Oliver Larraz is one that they're high on. His ACL, I think, sort of put them back of like he was the next for Bassett. Bassett was going to go on loan. There was some of the pipeline stuff that got thrown off for them, but it doesn't change the fact that they need the next Austin Trusty and Keegan Rosenberry of the worlds of like MLS players.
And Lawless Abubakar to be what he was, but they need to keep finding that.
Yeah. But remember, those moves all panned out, but like Kevin Cabral was in the same mold of like an undervalued asset you thought could do better.
So
in
was Viasia.
And they
thought Viasia would be the next Trusty.
Yeah.
And they didn't get it right, or the team wasn't set up to allow those players. They don't have clearly.
Abubakar Keita has been a guy that they thought maybe they could do that with. I mean,
I think they just extended him.
Did they?
Yeah.
Danny Leyva on loan to see if maybe they could Priso. But a lot of those guys just
Priso was good in this game. Priso came on at the half hour mark.
But he hasn't.
No.
I mean, we're talking about a full season of contributions. There's a reason why they've won four games. Yeah. You know, Diego Rubio's been hurt. He was really the only.
So all this stuff that we're talking about, and I'm going to bring it back to the St. Louis thing, like all the stuff that we're saying, we're just like naming players on the Colorado roster who have not produced this year. We could be doing the same thing with St. Louis, and those players have produced. You know, Jared Stroud, Samuel Adeniran, Nico Joachini. These were guys on the scrap heap. St. Louis went out and found them and has gotten like high level contributions from each one of those guys. And if that is how you're going to do business in MLS, then you have to be on the same page, coaching staff, front office, game model, and you have to understand how to put these players in a position to succeed. And what St. Louis is showing is that you can do that. And I would argue that Columbus is showing that with a lot of these guys as well. And it's a completely different game model, right? So it's not just cookie cutter, one size fits all. You just have to have clarity of how it's going to happen.
I'll give you not broad strokes on Columbus, though, because you're talking about Cucho Hernandez, who cost how much?
For
you're
sure.
talking
about Diego
Rossi, who cost how much?
For sure.
A lot of the other parts agree. But there still is a level of high-end talent that the Rapids have not even attempted to add to their roster.
I agree with that. But what I'm saying is that Will Sands was a cast off by NYCFC, and he was excellent at left wing back this year. And Alexander Matan, like, they were going to pay for his ticket to fly home. And Wilfred Nancy was like, no, we have something here. And like, Aiden Morris is a high level player, just like Cole Bassett was 2 years ago. And he's a higher level player now playing under Wilfred Nancy. So that, like, other teams are making it work with kind of the same blueprint that we're talking about for Colorado.
I actually think a more interesting comp is Cincinnati than Colorado, than Columbus, because I think when you look at 21 for Colorado and 22 for Cincinnati, it's like, how do you take the success in 21 of Colorado's higher level than what Columbus is going to do this year? But it's like, how do you keep the momentum going in the right direction? And Cincinnati brought in Noboto.
Yeah.
Who's elite and like made it easier for players to continue to progress, where Colorado's like, we can actually sell and not replace because like we were good. And that's sort of, I think, that decision point that Colorado got wrong or didn't try, whatever you want to call it. And I think that's where now you're falling back down. You have to find a way to rebuild and go back up.
A lot of time spent on Colorado.
Yeah.
As we expected.
All right, let's get to the Western Conference.
Should we talk about the Revs at all?
I'll say something. You respond to think if I'm wrong. I don't take a ton away from this particular result for the Revs after the week that they had going to altitude against a desperate team. It felt like a classic trap game to me, and I wouldn't judge any of the players or staff harshly on it at all.
I think that's fair. I actually thought the Revs looked good at times, especially going forward. Those wingers, Nacho Heal and Sean Kalai, they create some danger. I think the Revs are going to be okay.
You know, we always talk about the altitude in Bolivia. You got to talk about the altitude in Colorado too, right? Yeah. I mean, come on.
Fair point.
Big game for the Rapids. Congratulations to them. It's been a tough season. El Tráfico has been tough for LAFC this year, at least the last couple. What do we think of Buanga back and vibing? And here's the question for you between them and St. Louis. If the playoffs started today, who would you have more faith in to make a deep run? LAFC or City?
How many letters are? What's our point?
We haven't done that in a while. What do you think it would be at? What were your...
Probably like 18, maybe 20.
I think they've been like at a steady 18 all season.
Oh, long. That's high?
No. It's big? Like consistently decent. Yeah. They were at 34, maybe even the 45 range after the first 5 games.
Yeah, I'd say like 17 or 18.
We've come back down to earth.
Yeah, I think I've said this a couple times. I said this especially coming out of the SKC game, but I haven't seen St. Louis sort of up their game in high intensity moments, and there's no way to really prove that. Leagues Cup was one. They didn't take advantage of that. They were actually extremely poor at Leagues Cup. So I think when you talk about MLS playoffs and even with the format shifting a little, I think experience is big. St. Louis doesn't have that. If the playoffs started today, they would play the winner of Minnesota Portland in a play-in game, and LAFC would host San Jose. I actually think St. Louis's road could be tougher with the way Portland has played over
the last
Minnesota
won in St. Louis, handed them their first home loss.
So
Minnesota's great on the road, too. So it's one of those things.
Right, and you've got Reynoso. Pukki was not around for a large part of the season. So, and then after that, St. Louis would play right now what would be the winner of the Vancouver-Houston series, which are the two hottest teams in the Western Conference. So I would say LAFC.
What do you think about the Vancouver Whitecaps?
I love them. I know Goss. Look how giddy
Goss
is.
I'm kind of just Vancouver. Like,
we're all
do
here.
We have a rundown or is we just saying things?
No, I'm just vibing right now.
Okay, cool.
Just vibes.
I'm just going pure Vanni Sartini.
Wyatt Weeby style.
Yeah, exactly. We're just running through the other field while somebody else plays. We're like, look at me. That's sort of Vanny's way. When they lost at home to San Jose, I was like, that might have been a fatal mistake with a 7-game road trip. And they've won 3 of 4.
It's wild.
And drew the fourth.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure should have won that one. I'm forgetting what game it was, but I feel like they sort of blew it.
Was it in Portland or did they win that game?
I don't know. This is
they might have beaten them.
Good memory.
Game, by the way, no Kubas, no Sam Arakube. So to go, obviously Toronto's
and
a bit of a mess.
Off the bench.
Yeah,
and this is what Vanni Sartini has done really well is sort of create depth in that central midfield and depth in flexibility in how they're going to play, right? Because when it's Ali Ahmed in central midfield, Ali Ahmed, Schopf, and either Kubas or Seb Berhalter playing as the six, they play against the ball. They create a lot of turnovers. They get out on the run. They use those wingbacks even when it's not Adekugbe. They're very good at using those wingbacks. Then when it's Vite in, he's more of a kind of a true number 10. they use the ball more. They actually start being more of a possession team than a sort of pace and space type of team. I assume that's why you're saying you love to watch. Yeah,
yeah, it's just great. They're great to watch. I mean, it's fast. It's kind of chaotic, which is it's always fun. Vancouver all season long. It's for the sickos. Those late night.
Oh yeah.
You know, 10:30 kickoff. Vancouver against Portland or Vancouver against whoever. It's always so fun to watch. And if you're missing out on the East Coast, you're missing out on just fun soccer. It's literally been one my favorite team to watch probably this season.
But I think what we've seen on the road trip is the depth of the team. Like to be able to maintain performances like this and swapping in so many players and the travel being as far as it is, and you throw midweeks in that, is like they've got four center backs they're comfortable with. They only play three. They've got multiple wing backs they're comfortable with. Vite can come in and out. Gold can play different positions. Kubas has come out now and they've been able to cover for him, which I think was the one I wasn't sure they'd be able to get performances if he didn't start, but Ahmed's been a huge part of that. And credit to Berhalter, right, for sort of reestablishing himself professionally. I didn't know he'd be in MLS 2 years ago if you asked. And he's been pretty steady for them as well. So they've shown the depth to be able to have all this travel and continue to put performances together. And I think the timing of when Larea and Adekube came into the team was key as well. Of like, they had a
now
decent
junior
run,
by the way.
Yeah. They had a decent run, and then it's like, oh, we've got reinforcements coming in as well, right as they went into this trip. Larea has won them some games with his play as well. So, as you said, they're fun to watch. And everything, a lot of 50-50s with them, they win. Like, they're 60-40s across the field, and that's all 11 players, and I think that's one of their big advantages is just they win these, like, must-win moments, and then all of a sudden it's 2-1 them, and they can protect the lead.
To go to the Rapids point about replacing players that leave, Gressel left. Obviously, they sold Sergio Cordova or Cavallini left as well. But then you bring in Larea and Adekube. You bring in Junior Hoylett. They have done their best to replace and keep the season moving. And on 41 points right now, they have games in hand on everybody above them in the Western Conference playoff field currently. So they have an opportunity. If they win their game in hand right now, they would be ahead of LAFC.
Yeah.
They would jump to 44 points.
Yeah. I would love for them to host like a bunch of playoff games. That'd be because Canadian Championship Finals have been awesome there. They get 20, 25,000 in the building and it gets loud. And to try and build on that and take it to the next level, they won their first Cascadia Cup since 2016. They've won back-to-back Canadian championships. Like this would be the next step in the process. Plus, Fanny's got Andiamo sweatshirts, so like you got to get the swag off the shelves.
Oh yeah, I just want to make one point. The other thing that Vancouver do right is the draft. They still value the draft. They've gotten Javane Brown, Ryan Raposo, Levante Johnson, Simon Betcher. Like these are all guys who have contributed to this team's success this year, and I think by basically every measure, we consider this year to be massively successful for Vancouver.
Yep. Yep. Time to finish it off. That's been an issue for him in the past.
Yeah.
Minnesota at home, not so good. Lose to Sporting Kansas City. The Loons dominated. Sporting Kansas City had very.
I was talking about blowing the draft, not getting much out of the draft. Minnesota United, folks.
Kansas City get a goal from Gadi Kinda, and Minnesota fans are a little frustrated. Teemu Pukki, this has not gone the way that Minnesota would have hoped it would have gone. He's getting some chances, just not finishing, and that was their issue before. It remains the issue.
We spoke about it on our preview. Just Reynoso put so many beautiful, perfect balls into that box in that game for Teemu to just be able to slot that home, or you know, when Bongi's in, the same thing. And I said to you, how frustrating is it for Reynoso to be putting all these and not having that finishing product at the end of it? But then you brought up a good point. How frustrating was it for the rest of the team that he wasn't there earlier in the season to maybe avoid this situation that they're in now, fighting for a playoff spot? Again, another team that I really enjoy watching in Minnesota, but it's just like Jekyll and Hyde when they're, you know, in some games they look like they do the business in every game. Sometimes they just don't have that finishing product and it's frustrating.
Yeah, they feel more likely to get to the second round of the playoffs or not make the playoffs or go to the second round.
Right.
Like, as you said, they can show up big and play with anyone, but it feels like there's a decent chance they fall apart. The injuries have hurt for them of like they've lost flexibility. They've lost depth. And so then when they're not at 100%, they can't really get results. And then Pukki, I think there's a lot of good. Like there's a lot that makes sense. The space he creates with his runs, the known entity of Reynoso knowing he's getting those runs. I think a lot of that didn't exist in the past. That's all big, but you pay a lot of money. You got to do both. You got to score goals and be the one pulling space around. And if he doesn't hit, unless you get a Bongi heater, which clearly isn't going to happen because I got smoked in the meeting before this.
Remember when we, we'll get to this on squad pick. Remember we all sat around here and we were like, we could go Dini Bawanga or Bongi in squad pick.
And we all agreed on Bongi.
We went Mendier Garcia the other time too.
Yeah. Boy,
we're really trying.
Maybe we shouldn't pick Minnesota players.
You know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know what's like going to happen.
Worst team Reynoso. In the league underperforming expected goals. And we're like, them. Then. Those guys. Yeah. Those guys.
You know what's going to happen
Manuel,
this week.
Manuel next week.
Yeah. Portland with a big win in Austin, who seem like they are Dunsky. But the Timbers are in ninth. Evander, here we go. Portland.
This is Krusta.
Miles Joseph.
They need to play Marvin Lurie at center back. They need to play Frank Bolli at left back. Don't play any defenders and just play through people. Santi Moreno comes inside. He runs the game. Evander's making runs out of midfield.
It's the Felipe Mora show.
Felipe Mora show. He's been really good as a more of a facilitator with guys running off him rather than as the fox in the box guy, which is what he was when they got him on loan. He didn't do a lot else, but now he's been out for 2 years just crunching tape, just chewing on tape. And now he's a complete game guy. And I think I already asked you before this. We don't have a most improved player award.
I don't think we have an official most improved.
We do now.
Christian Paredes would be in the conversation, and it's not just this game, because when David Ayala went out, he stepped in as like a second eight or whatever around Evander, and he's been better on the ball and in the attack than he's ever been in his career. And now Diego Chara goes out. He drops back a little bit. He continues to give Evander and Santi Moreno freedom, covers a ton of gaps for them. He's been phenomenal, and I think they'd given up on him being this player. That was part of the move for Ayala. Was like, he's not going to be the next piece. And I don't know. He's been impressive this year.
They've been playing better ball over the past 4 or 5 weeks with Miles. Not to bag on Gio Severese, but like this team has like cut down on the number of launches from the back line. And that's big because Portland are still made to play direct soccer, but direct soccer doesn't mean all long balls. Like they were just launching everything from the back line. And when you're launching at Yaroslav Nizgoda or Felipe Mora, you're not going to win a lot of first ball, second ball.
And Moreno and
whoever
else are, and Jimmy Char are not going to win the second ball.
Right. They're not built for that. So playing direct, they're breaking more lines from center back and even from goalkeeper to into good spots in midfield, and then they go. And the other thing that they have for them is they're playing a single pivot now. In this game, it was Paredes, but you know, obviously Diego Chara, when he's back, he'll probably be the guy there. Single pivot, and then Evander on the left side of the three, and Santi Moreno on the right side. And that's more creativity than they've had in the middle in a long time.
Maybe ever.
And yeah, right. And when they play through those guys quickly, they're creating overloads either on the right side or the left side. So if they create overload on the right side through Moreno and Dairon Asprilla, then that leaves Evander free to sort of flow into the half space or even into the box as a secondary or tertiary scoring threat. It's very, I don't want to say simple, but like it's like he's not reinventing the wheel, Miles Joseph, but like it's basic patterns of play that's putting the players into position to use their strengths and not have to be, you know, playing Red Bull soccer, trying to win first ball, second ball. It's like, actually, you can run and you can pass. You guys are good at both of those things. Let's have a game model that actually does that. And it's been fun to watch.
He's also doing the Miles Joseph doing the classic Portland thing, which is like, oh, it's almost playoff time. Maybe both fullbacks can't be wingers.
Right.
Like Eric Miller started right. In this game. I think he played on the left and the right over the
course of
this
game. They've been swapping him back and forth.
Yeah. Because Claudio Bravo and Juan David Mosquera don't defend. So at some point, someone has to defend or make it three, give freedom to one of the two fullbacks to get forward and make life easier for the guys in front.
We don't like defenders. Only goal scorers here. Ooh. At extra time. And in squad pick, unfortunately for us, our ability to predict goal scorers turns out to be quite poor.
We went 0 for 5?
We did not. We got Brian White. That's a proverbial we. You chose Brian White. I chose Giacomo.
David's a big Duke guy.
Yeah.
He just loves Duke.
Blue Devils.
Oh, Blue Devils.
Giacomo Veroni was a miss from me. Stefano Julian Carranza, nope. Squad, Bongi, nope. Doyle, very close, however. Doyle, who is your put it in the books, squad pick, gonna score a goal pick.
Well, I've said
Howie Rose reference.
I've said the name Lionel Messi 15 times already on this podcast. I will say it again.
This has been a wonderful squad pick segment from the geniuses that brought you also
everything else we've ever done. Yeah.
Yes. Take the squad pick read, please, Dave.
Join our league. Go to MLSsquadpick.com to play, or you can click the link we'll tweet out. Join the official Extra Time League. Use code EXTRA to join. Must be all caps. If you're not clicking our link, you pick five players for your squad. If they all score in the same match that you win, you can win a free jersey, up to $160 gift card to MLS store. If all your players score each round you play, gives you one entry for the $10,000 grand prize at the end of the season. Let's pick our squad.
You do that much better than I do.
I was born for that, Reed.
No doubt about it. Now, I just want to put it out there. The average number of goals, this is the inside data that we need, per squad, that's everyone playing this game, is 2.3.
Wow.
So
we're below average.
Yes.
Ouch.
Far, like, way below average.
I wonder if our... are we an oligarchy? What is all of us deciding something together?
Politburo.
I wonder if our style maybe doesn't work best to run a team like this. Maybe you need one single...
No comment.
...power. Yeah.
I'm out on the management decisions these days. Doyle, who's your choice?
I see two fairly obvious ones. I'm going to go with Cucho. In fact, I'm going to guarantee he scores two goals.
Ooh.
Wow. We don't need two. We
just need one.
Very much just need one. We don't need two. Of course, this is for match day 33, Wednesday night. Full slate of action. Dave, as our resident, you know, only person that hit it.
Yeah, the only one who got one right.
We need two. We need two.
Just pick Campana.
No, I'm actually going to pick Carranza.
Going back to
Charlotte.
Going back to the well?
Yeah, at Charlotte. They didn't give up transition goals over the last few weeks, but they need to push and go for goals. So I think they might leave themselves open a little bit. Carranza had an assist to Cincinnati in the last game, which was a huge play for Cincinnati's season. So maybe he'll do it for his own team.
All right, Stefano, who you got?
So going to take an Inter-Miami guy. Not going to take Messi, not going to take Campana. I'm going to take Facundo Farias in this
ready.
Match. This is my only reasoning to not take Campana. He scored the two goals this week. I'm just playing the
odds
here.
So you think he's going to regress?
So I think he'll regress a bit, and I think Farias gets a goal against Toronto.
The issue is Toronto cannot defend in the air, and Campana is one of the better forwards in the league in the air.
I'm not saying that this is a smart decision by me or thought out. I'm just going with Farias. I'm playing the odds. This is just vibes, guys.
Also, the odds are they're going to score more than one goal.
Right, right. So
we've gone Minder Garcia. We've gone Bongi.
You're going to pick Pookie?
We're going
Let's go. We're
going Pookie. The LA Galaxy for sure are going to give up opportunities. I think Teemu Pookie, after literally putting his entire head inside of his shirt after missing a very obvious chance against Sporting Kansas City, is going to make up for it in LA.
So now we need a fifth person.
Yeah,
right?
We need a squad pick.
I'm looking at, I think St. Louis LAFC, there'll be goals.
Yeah, St. Louis.
Let's pick Joao Klaus.
Let's go, Joao Klaus. I'm good
what
with that. Anybody
goal
else?
Against Houston, by the
Sam
way.
Sam Adeniran will be back. Could go Adeniran.
Yeah.
But Klaus, two goals in two
or
games.
Or do we stay in that game and go back to Bwanga after the way
don't he's hate
done?
It.
I don't know.
It's going to give up chances.
Break the deadlock here, Doyle. Klaus?
I think it's Bwanga.
Or Bwanga. Okay, we're going Bwanga. That would have worked out last week, so certainly it will not work out this week for us. Yeah. There is our five for squad pick this week, and before we leave you, we'll have a quick line on biggest matches of match day 33. Dave, tell us why we should watch Houston-Vancouver.
Because of the two best teams in the Western Conference. They are fourth and fifth. 1 point separates them. Vancouver's in fifth, but they have one game less played, so they could jump Houston for a spot in the postseason. They are two of the teams that know who they are. They're playing confident. And you look at a game that fits pretty well of like Houston wants a ton of the ball, especially at home. Vancouver is happy to sit off and, as we talked about, hit direct and hit in transition. And so I think both teams are going to be fairly comfortable. No Coco Carrasquilla.
Bummer.
That sort of leans things towards Vancouver, but fifth game of a road trip, at some point it's going to fall apart. You also, for the Dynamo, so they play on Wednesday night. They play this weekend on the road, I believe, at SKC. And then they have the U.S. Open Cup final next Wednesday in Miami. I would assume this is the best 11 you could put out there, and maybe you sort of look towards a little bit of rest at the weekend. So my expectation is we'll see Ace and we'll see Bossy and some of the bigger pieces in this game. They are two of the teams that have been the most fun to watch over the last 3 weeks, and now you get to see them face off.
I'm going to do Sporting KC, Nashville. Kansas City was above the playoff line for the first time this year, then dropped below it because of the Portland result. But have an opportunity at home to beat a Nashville team that have been awful in MLS. One win in their last nine games, scored four goals in those nine games, and have been shut out six times. 32 goals scored in 27 games. It is just a rinse and repeat. Somebody, please, anybody, help Hani Mukhtar. And Sam Surridge, please let it be you to help my Golden Boot team. All right. St. Louis, LAFC, Doyle.
Yeah, top of the West, number one. St. Louis, number two, LAFC. If LAFC go to St. Louis and win this, I think the gap narrows to 3 points, which would be the closest it's been in the Western Conference since March. LAFC looked good. It's an asterisk, though, because it come this Galaxy team, worst defense in the league just in terms of goals allowed per game and total. That said, St. Louis lets you get behind them. They let you get out and run, and I think LAFC this year are at their best when they're doing that. Bouanga getting two goals. Maybe his confidence is back. Carlos Vela looked good, dropping into the pocket as a false nine, creating chances. And, of course, they beat the hell out of St. Louis the last time these two teams met.
Asterisk on that one, though. There was no Tim Parker. There was no, obviously, no Joakim Nielsen, no DPs, no Klaus or Leuven. It was a hugely rotated team, and St. Louis was good for 75 minutes.
Okay.
So I'm gonna throw that one out with the bathwater and say this is the true measurement between the teams this year.
All right. I will accept that. I do think St. Louis are the favorites in this game. They're at home, and home is, you know, they've been very good there. And they tend to come out on the front foot and put pressure on teams right from the jump. And LAFC have not generally come out of the locker room and realized that a game was happening until 10 minutes in. Most of the year. So this could end up going in that like sort of classic St. Louis at home where they're up 2-0 before 10 minutes are done.
Galaxy Minnesota.
Yeah, obviously the main reason we want to watch this game is because we just picked Pookie in our
no other reasons
for our, you know,
playoff
score
line,
a goal.
Whatever.
No, look, I mean, Minnesota, this is, to me, it's not a make or break game, but this is a true test for Minnesota. Can you go to a struggling Galaxy team in a moment where you desperately need 3 points to keep moving up the table? Can you go and dominate a Galaxy team that just got dominated against LAFC, that hasn't been good, that it's not a complete roster, that has Ricky Pooj not playing the best soccer that he's played this season? So for Minnesota, this is a kind of a put up or shut up game. Like you got to go out there and show that you can take 3 points, take it convincingly, step on the throat, and be able to go back home with 3 points and keep moving up that table.
And if the Galaxy don't win it, it's likely that the gap for them will be around 9 or 10 points,
right,
and it's probably over for them. So they got to win at home. Right. Yeah, it's a desperation game. All right, that's it for us.
Sorry for you.
I know. I haven't been tending to the shrine the way that I should.
No, I don't think you have. It didn't even move.
You know, when you move across country, yeah, it loses some of its magic.
Clearly.
Galaxy fans can go ahead and blame me for that, but you know.
Oh, they will.
Get a little Billy Sharp memorabilia, and we'll be back running. All right, that's it for us. Enjoy Wednesday night's action. We will be back on Thursday to review all of Match Day 33. Enjoy your weekend, everyone. Go check out MLSES.com. Adios.